You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello and welcome to the only six-star wrestling radio show on planet Earth. This is World Class Radio. I'm your co-host, Jordan the Body Fox, and with me today, the hawk to my animal, Mr. Ray Cash. Ray, what's up, bro?
I'm hawk, huh?
Or you could be animal. It don't matter. I just meant, like, you know, because they're boys.
I don't know if I have a problem with that, but sure. I'll take it. Yeah. How you doing?
Next time, that's what my new deal is. I'm going to start doing tag teams. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I was just about to throw some examples, but I don't want to throw any examples because I want to, you know what I mean? If I throw four examples at you, then I'm going to be like, well, shit, what am I going to say Monday now? You know what I mean?
No, I'm with that. I like it. Yeah.
So, day three of the trial, man, and this is kind of something that whenever we got on the phone early this morning, it was kind of the first thing that popped out of both of our mouths, and we were both like, you know, hey, I was like, I want to cover this again today, and you were like, bro, I've been reading it, you know, since it popped up. I was refreshing the webpage, so you know that when we agree that quickly on a topic, it needs to be talked about, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, we're going to start with some day three notes. And when we're talking about the trial, if you didn't catch the episode yesterday, we're referring to the Dr. Amen versus CM Punk and Colt Cabana. Is it officially a defamation lawsuit? Is that what it is?
That is, yes. That is the main thing that is being sued for. Yes, defamation.
Gotcha. And just to give a little backstory real quick, in 2014... CM Punk went on Colt Cabana's The Art of Wrestling podcast, which is an extremely popular podcast. When Cabana and I carpooled in April to a show in Dallas, I actually referred to him as the Godfather of Wrestling podcast, and he kind of chuckled. He kind of thought that was funny. But wouldn't you agree with that? That he's kind of the Godfather. He's kind of the guy that made wrestling podcasts. Or put them on the map, rather.
I most certainly had never heard of a wrestling podcast until him. So yeah, gotta be.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. That's probably even a better way to put it than to make him sound like a legit godfather. Why don't you just call him the first wrestling podcaster? It sounds way better.
Well, if nothing else, he's definitely the most famous.
Yeah, true story.
Yeah.
But anyway, Punk was on Cabana's podcast. He said a bunch of stuff about the WWE doctor, Dr. Amen. The main thing was that he had some sort of injury, some sort of bump underneath his skin, on his back, around his waistline, that went untreated, even though he complained about it seemingly every day, is what he described. It turned into staph. And he had to have it cut out and...
MRSA, which is like the worst type of staph, yeah.
True story. And when I say untreated, that's a bit much, because he said that all the doctor did was give him Z-Pak after Z-Pak, and then at one point he gave him even stronger antibiotics. And the doctor later told him, you know, you could have died from the antibiotics, and the MRSA could have killed you.
Well, another doctor did.
Yes. Another doctor that Punk went to, that this doctor ultimately lanced the injury and got, I forget what you call that, but he squeezed all the infectious pus out of it, and, you know, helped him out.
Basically, the WWE doctor never treated Punk for the bump because his claim is that they never saw one.
Exactly. Yes, this doctor, Dr. Amon, WWE doctor, has, once this came out, has since said, no, you never told me about this. I'm not sure it even existed. And he's pointed to, you know, the 2014 Royal Rumble when Cabana said that it was bothering him at the, during the Rumble because it was on his waistline, and he said, you know, his tights would be rubbing on it and stuff. This is what he said in the podcast. And the doctor is like, well, where the hell is this in the video? And if you watch the video, you do not see anything. The doctor, in day two, there was text messages released between Punk and Amon. There was no talk of a bump on his back. There was talk of antibiotics. There was talk of Punk being sick a lot, having headaches, getting migraines after taking bumps, some other stuff that I can't recall right off the top of my head, but there was plenty of evidence that Punk was like, bro, I'm sick, I need time off, like, what's going on with me?
He was definitely injured a lot, yeah.
Yes. He was definitely working through a lot of injuries, but there was no mention of a bump on the back, like a physical, like, BU, you know what I mean, like a pus ball in the back. There was no proof of any mention between the two. There's no video proof, etc. So, you know, the whole trial is for over $1 million. Dr. Amon says that his job has not been in jeopardy or anything, but he's had a lot of emotional stress because there's people, Punk fans are tweeting him all the time. They're bringing signs to Raw shows, to SmackDown shows, calling him Dr. Z-Pack, yada, yada, yada.
That's part of it, but it's more, he feels like that has defamed his ability to be an objective doctor. And he believes that they have ruined his name by insinuating that he cares more about what his employers want him to do than doing his job as a medical doctor. Because if he were to ever leave WWE,
right,
that would affect his business, and his premiums have gone up and his insurance quadrupled because directly after the podcast came out. So it's affected him,
right,
in some way, form, or fashion.
Okay. Yeah. Valid point. Valid point. And so, yeah, that has been the case thus far. We're about to go into day three. Is there anything that you want to talk about leading up to day three? Is there anything that you read about that intrigued you or anything else regarding the trial up to what we're going to cover today?
Well, we had mentioned, you did a good job of kind of breaking it down, but we had mentioned yesterday that it's not a good day for anybody. This is, you know, this isn't a good thing for anybody. It just, the fact that this is a trial, it's crazy. But
yeah, you're right. It's, there's not really, you know, whether Punk's lying, whether he's telling the truth, there's really no winner in this. You know what I mean?
No,
if Punk turns out to be lying and the doctor gets $1 million, the doctor still hasn't won. Because like you said, all that stuff has been raised on him. This is going to follow him the rest of his career. And that $1 million is going to, you know, in comparison of what the doctor can make in 2 or 3 years, that's a drop in the bucket, you know? So,
right, and I'm sure it'll make him feel like he's vindicated, but it's not going to change his reputation.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so, yeah, either way it goes, you're right, nobody wins. But there were some interesting things yesterday, particularly that the story or the story and that everybody on WWE's side has all corroborated, actually, that in the Royal Rumble, Punk got in Royal Rumble 2014, which was actually, if you guys remember, Punk's last full day with the company. Punk got apparently got a concussion in the Royal Rumble from a clothesline from Kofi, rode out of the ring, called for the doctor, told the doctor he got rocked. The doctor said, man, you got a concussion, you need to get out of the match. Punk said, nah, that ain't happening. they called Gorilla to tell Gorilla that he had a concussion. The refs and everybody around the ring tried to tell Punk to get out of the ring, and he refused numerous times. In fact, very, very flagrantly. And they sent Kane out to eliminate him. And Punk was mad because he wasn't supposed to get eliminated at that point. So he feels like the medical team ruined his creative plans, even though they were trying to help him because he had a concussion. Now, if you remember, when Kane did eliminate Punk, he did choke someone through a table. So while they were trying to help him, the fact that Kane did that, whether he was told to do that or not, that doesn't look good. But nonetheless, Punk was very pissed. Was cussing out everybody and was very upset backstage after the situation, this, that, and the other. That's probably the most notable thing, that on top of all the text messages between the two. And Punk never mentioned in any text messages between him and the doctor, which there are tons of, that he ever had a staph infection or a fatty deposit or a bump, or whatever you would want to call it, on his back. That was never mentioned in any of the text messages between the two, as far as we know from yesterday. But in terms of looking back on the doctor's perspective, the doctor was freely giving out Z-Packs and antibiotics without prescriptions, which could come back to haunt him. I don't know what the jurisdiction is on a bit of a traveler's circus type deal where they don't have the ability to go to a stationary pharmacy every day, but that could be very, very bad. And the doctor admitted that he didn't believe that it affected his job with WWE. And he admitted that he wasn't suing it for any emotional stress because he had never went and got checked for that or no doctors, and he didn't think that, you know, it was basically just fans that were, you know, kind of giving him hell and things of that nature. And he even made fun of him and some of the wrestlers he was friends with and people he would text with, the doctor I'm talking about, right, would even joke about the Z-Pack, him being called Dr. Z-Pack, and he would be the one to make the joke, which could be construed as, well, how could you be upset, hurt, or disappointed, or be affected by this when you're joking about it yourself? Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of interesting revelations yesterday, but I don't think any of us, any wrestling fan who doesn't know anything about the backstage workings of that particular match in general, knew that Punk had a concussion. And that's a very big part of the story, I believe.
Yeah. Do you think that Punk not wanting to leave the match after they told him, you know, hey, you know, come out of the match, roll out, whatever, and then they sent Kane down to eliminate him. And yep. Then later when he protested to the doctor, like, what the fuck was that, yada, yada, yada. Do you think that any of that was because of the concussion? Or do you think it was all him being a true sportsman and professional?
Well, if you look up symptoms of a concussion, some of them can involve anger and confusion and disillusion and things of that nature. So I very well believed that could have been a big part of it. But the problem is, Punk has a reputation. So if he didn't have the reputation that he has, mm-hmm. which is belligerent and flagrant at times and moody and things of that nature, which are, again, are not things that I'm making up. These are things he's described himself as.
True story. Right? Yeah.
I'm never going to say something about something. I'll definitely give my opinion on things. But when I'm trying to be objective, I'm never going to say things about a person they won't say about themselves. Because I called CM Punk a dick numerous times. He calls himself a dick. I'm not saying that to be offensive. These are words he uses to describe himself.
Right.
But so his reputation is one that everything he did falls in line with that, because we all know Punk was very worried and aware of his spot. And for him to come out according to the testimony, because there's always a chance this isn't true, but this is what the testimony has been come out from 4, 5, 6 guys now, maybe more. But for him to directly say, "You ruined my creative," or whatever, some semblance of that, makes one believe that he was aware of what was going on. Plus, if you would argue, and this isn't fair to him, but this isn't fair to anybody with a concussion, so this is just opinion here. You could argue that if the concussion really affected him, then somebody would have noticed. None of us ever noticed he had a concussion. He acted like everything. He moved like normal when he went back in the ring. You know what I'm saying? I've seen people with concussions when they get them. And again, you can't compare every concussion the same. So please parse my words. But I've seen people with concussions once they get them, and when you see them get it, they're very noticeably out of it. You know, disoriented or lost or head in the clouds or deer in the headlights or whatever euphemism you want to use. Punk didn't seem that, so I don't doubt he had a concussion. But I don't know if that concussion affected him to the extent that maybe he may want to make us think it did, because he seemed very aware of what he was doing.
Right.
Based on the testimony.
I got you. Valid point. So some of the stuff that that I read, first off, let's give a shout out to the guy that wrote them. This is not Nick Houseman that wrote it yesterday.
Yeah, Nick had something that he had a previous thing that he had to do yesterday.
Previous so engagement.
Previous. There you go. I was looking for the particular special word. That's why you're the journalist.
Yeah. Right.
But the New Japan writer for WrestleZone, Ross Berman, took his place. So, yeah.
Cool, man. The first thing that I noticed when I'm reading this from Ross Berman is one of the first, I think it was like the second or third line, was he said Punk and Cabana were friendly before the trial began. Ah, tell me you're happy to hear that, my friend. Tell me.
I'm happy to hear it, but I'm skeptical of that.
Uh-oh, let's hear it. What for?
Well, and this is, and maybe I have a level of cynicism I don't want to admit to, but part of me, they haven't been friendly before this. They've barely talked
mm-hmm.
since all of this happened. They had a very public falling out, which we spoke on yesterday. They didn't talk yesterday before the trial. They did talk a little bit in the middle of the trial in the afternoon session, but it looked to be more of, we need, like, did you hear what they said in this trial? Yeah, I heard this. What you think? Yeah, it seemed like that, right?
Uh-huh.
Chatter. I truly believe, because yesterday did not go well for Punk. It didn't. There's nobody on this earth that would think that yesterday was a good day for Punk. Right? It wasn't damning evidence that, you know, he's automatically lost yesterday, but it wasn't a good day for him. I feel like maybe their lawyers told them, you guys need to be more friendly, because this is a defamation lawsuit. And Colt Cabana took the stand today, as we'll speak about. But because the whole point of the lawsuit is that a man who was talked about in this podcast was defamed to the point where his ability to do business was dramatically changed, it looks bad when the two people who did the podcast aren't friends anymore, because it makes that look like it really affected them. Because if it wasn't that damning, why are Punk and Cabana not friends anymore? If it wasn't as big, it wasn't that big a deal. If this man has no leg to stand on, if, you know, it was just two friends kicking back, talking, just talking, and you could even argue if they were talking in character as pro wrestlers, then why are they not friends anymore? That looks bad. So I feel like their lawyers told them, y'all got to be friendly. You got to make the because the jury doesn't watch wrestling,
right?
So y'all got to make the jury think that y'all are still friends, that y'all are on the same page. They have different. They started off with the same lawyer and have different lawyers now. They very publicly do not talk anymore. And close on the stand, and they just happened to walk in together laughing. That looks like that was planned. And I hate that I feel that cynical about it because I love their friendship. But just something about that didn't feel natural to me.
I got you. It's a fair point. I'm hoping that that is not the case, as I'm sure you are too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But that's a very valid point, man. You know, as bad as it is to say, when you are in a court like that and there's 12 people that are going to judge you, you know, you have to put on, you know, you have to put your best foot forward. And if that means having to be friends with your former best friend in front of these people, then so be it. When it comes to my question to you now is, when it comes to the argument that these two guys have had, they're falling out. If you had to choose one or the other, who would you more likely side with? And before you answer that, let me, for the people that didn't catch the show yesterday and don't know what happened, I'll just give you a real quick synopsis of what happened. So after it was announced that they were being sued. There is theories out there, and I'm not saying that it happened because they've heard one of these theories or not. I'm just going to put that out there, that a high-ranking official, you know, being Vince McMahon, was bankrolling Dr. Amon's side, like paying for his court costs, or not his court costs, but his lawyer fees and stuff like that.
That is the rumor, yeah.
Yeah, but whether Punk has heard that or not, and whether it's true or not, and by all means, I'm not saying it is,
sure.
But Colt Cabana showed up at a WWE live event backstage, not on camera, obviously, but backstage to visit some old friends that he and Punk used to wrestle with on the indie scene.
And to interview somebody, I think.
Oh, really? Okay. Even
I think he might have been interviewing somebody for the podcast.
Oh, right on, right on. Did not know that. Punk got wind of this. He felt like Cabana should not have been there since Dr. Amon, the WWE doctor, is suing both of them. They had fallen out, and they haven't been speaking in quite a long time.
Yeah.
And this is actually the first report that I know of, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ray, but this is the first report that I believe I've come across personally that has said anything about them talking since that stuff came out about Punk being mad at Cabana.
So absolutely, publicly, yes. Sweet. Now, they both stay in Chicago. So for all we know, Cabana might be at his house every day. But publicly, they haven't spoken since they fell out.
Right. And the last thing I want to say before you answer the question is, do you think that this could be a work? And let me explain why. Their argument. Because and it might sound stupid when I get it out of my mouth. So
any question you ask is going to be valid, you know, so...
What if Punk was like, oh man, you know, if since I said this on your podcast, that makes you liable, but if we separate ourselves and they think that we're no longer friends, maybe Punk, you being Cabana, can get a fair shake. Poke holes in that theory that I just threw out there right now. Do you think that holds any water at all?
I have never thought about it. Off the top of my head, I don't think it does. I can see why that would be something that would be thought about by us. And because we want to believe that they're friends and that Punk isn't going to turn on his best friend.
True.
We want to believe that. So, yeah. But if to poke holes in the theory like you asked me, I would say, well, one, Punk isn't paying for it. Coats, lawyers. In fact, they got separate ones. So if you were really looking out for Colt, then y'all, just because y'all don't agree with each other, y'all are on the same lawsuit. Like, he's not suing y'all separately. He's suing you together. So just because y'all don't get along personally doesn't mean y'all can't work professionally together. So that one little blurb makes me think that there's something real there. To my second point, if Punk was trying to do that, I get if that was his goal to protect Colt, but I don't think it's helping Colt, because helping Colt doesn't help you. Like, Colt's not going to get off, and you do. Like, there's no part of this where Colt can win and you lose. Again, these aren't two separate trials. He's not suing Scott Colton in one trial and suing Phil Brooks in another. He's suing Phil Brooks and Scott Colton as a duo. So anything that happens to one happens to both. So if all of this is proven that, proven may not be the word. If all of this is deemed that Punk knew what he was doing and purposely affected this man's career with his words, that no matter what Colt Cabana did, they both lose. So, you know, if he was trying to help him out, it wouldn't affect him, but it's going to affect Colt regardless of what happens.
It's a valid point. I see your point.
Yeah, I would love for that to be the case. I would love for Punk to really, you know, kind of, for lack of a better term, you know, fall on the sword for his best friend, seeing as he got him into it. I would love for that to be the case, or to believe that's the case, but I just don't believe it.
I gotcha. And with them being sued together, that might not be possible, the only way that might be possible is if Punk picked up Cabana's court costs, lawyer fees, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, they're not even working together.
Gotcha.
They're not working together in the trial. They have separate lawyers.
Gotcha.
So okay. If they were working together in the trial, then that would be something for me to believe in.
Gotcha.
But they're not even working together.
Makes sense, man. So now, finally, after I asked that question to you like 15 minutes ago and then said 500 different things and had you answer two more things, where do you fall? What side of the fence do you fall on the Cabana-Punk argument? And again, I'm referring to the one where Punk is reportedly mad and not talking to Cabana because Cabana showed up at a WWE live event backstage after an employee of the WWE already filed to sue them.
I support Colt Cabana 120,000%.
Really?
There are, at any given time, approximately 200-plus people backstage at a WWE event. Colt Cabana has been wrestling for 15-plus years. You're telling me that you want Colt to have beef with an entire organization and everybody involved in the organization because you don't like somebody at the organization or you have a problem with that organization? That's basically you saying that, hey, I don't mess with that dude. So that's like me and you being friends like we are, right? And me and you hanging out, and you see me go speak to Mike, right? And you got beef with Mike. So you end our friendship because you saw me be friendly with Mike. And so that's basically what it is.
Right.
That's foul. That's whack. Like, I don't have a problem with Punk feeling a certain way about that. That's his right. But to end your friendship with your longest and best friend because he did something that benefited his career? He didn't go work for WWE. He didn't go meet with Vince. He didn't go to have lunch at Starbucks with the doctor. He went to visit friends.
I dig it. That's, you know what I mean? Yeah. Very valid point, so, man.
What did he do malicious?
Yeah.
Right?
No, I agree. I'm my silence means, you know what my silence means. I don't have an answer.
Yeah, but that's just whack to me. That's straight up whack to me. Like, that's not friendship. Like, that's the type of thing that shows you the type of friend you're dealing with. Like if I was Colt, and then this may not be relevant, but it's relevant to me. CM Punk is a multimillionaire based on wrestling alone. A multimillionaire based on solely wrestling. He's a genuine celebrity at this point now, who has parlayed his wrestling career into another career in mixed martial arts, making more millions of dollars, which he got without any martial arts background. He had some jiu-jitsu classes. He's like a blue belt. Right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Colt Cabana, and this is not a diss on Colt or independent wrestling or wrestlers in general. Not at all. But Colt still is an indie guy. Right? Mm-hmm. Colt is not rich by any stretch of imagination. He's doing good. He's doing fine. Absolutely. He ain't got Phil Brooks money. So I could understand if Cabana was loaded, right? I could understand better Punk having an issue with him going. Because if you're loaded, you ain't got to go to WWE and go meet the guy. You could just have the guy meet you wherever you want him to meet you. But that's not the situation. That's not the case. So, you know, if he was going to meet friends and to possibly want to interview somebody. So that's like saying, well, Stone Cold, look, I know you got issues with this company, but you can't go up to WWE and go interview people because I don't like the company and you're my friend. What? No. Not fair. Just because you got beef, you can't make my beef your beef.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I dig it. I totally understand, man. I do feel like, you know, again, like I've said many, many, many times, you know, I really look up to Punk. He was a game changer in my life, and I posted about this yesterday, you know, in me finding happiness and sobriety and a way for me to express myself artistically, that ultimately you and I do through wrestling, through our radio show. So I have mad respect for Punk, and I truly do not want to believe that he lied, and I don't want to believe that he has been immature in his friendship with Colt Cabana and et cetera. But, you know, I'm also a realist, you know what I mean? And it's not looking good for Punk, man, and it sucks. You know, just this from a personal standpoint, you know, me sitting here and you dropping truth bombs and, you know, WrestleZone, you know, obviously reporting, you know, information on the trial right down the middle. They're not trying to put a WWE spin on it or an indie spin on it. They're just simply reporting what the people inside the courtroom are saying. And it sucks, man. It sucks really bad. But, you know, eventually, if you're a piece of shit, eventually it's going to come out, you know? So this could potentially be the coming out party for CM Punk. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know me. As a person, I believe in accountability.
Yes.
And while I've been very vocal that I hate that Colt has to deal with this because all Colt was doing his job, sometimes you can't just say anything you want. Like, you legally, you have the right to say what you want, but that does not impugn you from consequence.
Yeah,
that just means
freedom of speech is not freedom from consequence.
Yes. So you can't just say what you want and then it's not true and it affects the other person and they don't have the right to retaliate, not physically, but you know what I mean, legally. And that's what's happening here. So, proof's in the pudding, man.
Yep.
You know, if you really want to say what you want, you got to own up to it.
It's a true story. It's a very true story. Well, let's talk about the trial for a little bit, shall we?
Let's do it, man. Yeah, they broke it down into, of course, morning and afternoon once again. And just for the record, today they are reconvening at 12, so there will not be two sessions. It will only be an afternoon session.
Got you. Would you like to? I know we both read on this. Do you want to kick it off, and I'll just hit some input here and there, and then we can switch up or something like that?
Sure. Well, this is Ray Cash, World Class Radio's legal expert speaking.
Uh-oh. Hey, we need to get you like a little intro, little 5-second intro music, you know, where sometimes they do like a spinny thing on the deal when they kick it to a correspondent. It's like, get more
Law and Order music.
Yeah, get dun dun dun.
Boom boom.
Yeah.
There we go.
Ray Cash on the scene.
Well, guys, it's crazy down here, and
looking at your phone for notes, you know, and people running around in the background. Fucking right in the pussy.
Absolutely. Yeah, people breaking in and stuff, be kicking them out.
Yeah.
So in the morning session, there were four video testimonies shown. One from Timothy Yang, who's the audio tech for the Royal Rumble, who's basically along with Mark Yeaton, a guy who controls all the audio around and is in control of the communication between backstage and ringside. They interviewed Larry Heck, who was athletic trainer backstage. So Dr. Amon and Larry Heck worked together in concert. The doctor is ringside, and Larry Heck is the guy backstage. They interviewed John Cone, who, as your WWE fan, you know, he's one of the senior referees. And he was one of the four referees for the Rumble, who specifically spoke to Punk that night. And they interviewed Kane, a.k.a. Glenn Jacobs, a.k.a. the future mayor of Knox County, Tennessee.
Yeah, it's so weird to hear, man.
It's very weird, but I do believe he's winning. He doing his thing down there, but that's another conversation. This is the legal version of World Class Radio. The political version of World Class Radio is next week. So yes, when they interviewed, and by the way, it's very interesting that they had to do these interviews from in video, like recorded, because wrestling is a circus. You know, everybody can't just leave their job to come up.
Right.
And what it means is that both lawyers had to work together to fly out at the same time to interview these guys. So, hey, the lawyers getting paid. Because right. they are doing their jobs, if nothing else, by flying and doing all of this. So, Timothy Gang, and let me say his last name wrong, is Gaeng. He's the first, like I said, the first guy that they showed his testimony. And Gang says he was responsible for setting up the announce headsets and ringside headsets. That was his job. He confirmed that he saw Punk in the Rumble, and he saw an incident. He didn't see the injury happen, but he definitely knew there was an incident happening. He did hear communications through the audio channels that somebody asked the ref if Punk was all right. He confirmed that the doctor ringside was Dr. Amon, and he said in a direct quote, "All I heard over the headset is he hurt? Get him out of there." And he thinks that he believes that was Triple H saying that. And he says, that's the voice I remember distinctly, because you know Triple H is one of the guys on the headsets. Triple H, Vince, Michael Hayes, and that night, Billy Kidman. He said the audio techs were a different device than the refs, because of course the refs can't talk back, the audio techs can. He saw a ref or possibly multiple refs checking on him, and then he heard either Triple H or Vince McMahon say, "If he's hurt, check on him." And he says it kept going on for minutes. And they pressed him, and he said it estimated probably about several minutes. He didn't see Punk get treated by the doctor, and he didn't hear any conversations, but he was focused on his job. So that's that. When they talked to the Larry Heck, the athletic trainer, Heck said he knew him as a Punk as an employee, and he thinks he was on SmackDown. But you know, Heck has been there for 17 years, so he might remember more from SmackDown and Raw. He helped Punk as needed per show. At times, he would tape his ankles, tape his knees, and stretch them nightly on request. In the training room, of course. From October 2013 to January 2014, he provided Punk with eye packs, and he kept a direct treatment log, so there is proof of this. And the logs are in Punk's medical report. And on top of stretching and all that, he said he would always focus on stretching his lower back and his legs, his hips, things like that. And the hot packs, specifically, Punk would put them on his bare lower back below the belt line, And Punk would go through multiple hot packs a night. A lot of times, not taking them off until right before he went through the curtain.
That, can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah, Punk stays. First of all, Punk is straight edge. Right? So right. There's nothing taking, unless it's antibiotics, there's nothing he's taking to take the edge off. And I'm not trying to damn anybody else.
Yeah, no, you know? Totally understand.
I think y'all get what I'm trying to point out.
Yeah, but there's probably a time that he could take, medicine.
Sure.
And I pain think pill or yeah, something. Yeah,
yeah,
and I do believe, that just like anything else, and if please write in if. I am wrong in any way, if anyone out there is straight edge, please write in if I'm wrong, and please forgive me if I'm wrong. But I think, just like with anything else, there is certain people within straight edge that believe that as long as you're not abusing it and a doctor prescribed it, then you're obviously allowed to take it. You know what I mean? Like, if you're straight edge and you got high blood pressure.
But
there's also, people that would look at Punk's situation and be like, well, if he prescribes you a narcotic, that's not straight edge to take it. So I could see that in some way being straight edge would definitely, like what you're saying, it would get into the way, mm-hmm. depending on what CM Punk feels about medication from a doctor. Go ahead.
No, I'm just gonna just piggyback on that. The thing about being straight edge is freedom from addiction,
right?
So
right.
Antibiotics aren't addictive, right?
Yeah,
like
good point. Yeah, good point.
Addictive.
Good point.
But
yeah,
narcotics
that's a good way
are
to put
addictive,
it.
And that's something you know very personally, very well.
Absolutely.
Like, say if you had a surgery and they gave you Vicodins, dog, them Vicodins could very easily get you addicted.
Oh yeah.
So that's the type of stuff that straight edge guys don't believe in.
Yeah.
So yeah, Punk's definitely taking vitamins and prescription pills and stuff, but he's not like antibiotics or things that are specifically helping his blood system or stuff like that. But in terms of a narcotic or a strictly pain pill, yeah, he's not taking that.
I dig it. What I wanted to talk about for a second is the fact that he specifically says, sometimes I would keep a hot pack on his lower back until he went out the curtain.
Yeah.
Man.
That man was in pain.
What kind of, just the amount of pain that, a professional athlete is in.
Yeah.
That, literally until the minute that he goes out in front of 16,000 people on a typical Raw on Monday. He needs a hot pack, and I can understand. I know that I think if you think about it, he's warming his muscles up, right? So maybe he wanted his back muscles completely warmed up, and yada yada. But to have a hot pack on your back until the second you go out in front of the crowd. Even if it is just to warm up your muscles and make sure you got flexibility and stuff, what kind of issues are you dealing with that you need to stay warm? You know what I mean? That you need that to happen. You know what I mean?
So no, it's just, I definitely know what you mean.
Yeah.
So I'm on both sides of the fence on this. First and foremost, we all know as diehard that Punk wasn't a bodybuilder. Punk wasn't a wrestling star, like amateur style. Punk was a guy who wasn't super athletic, who loved wrestling and worked his ass off. Right? So, very, very visibly, you could see the effect that the business and the road and the bumps took on him. You could look at him and see that. You could just looking at him night after night. More so than, some other guys, right? It's just like, you see Seth Rollins today. Seth Rollins is a CrossFit fool, right? He lives by it. They call him CrossFit Jesus.
That's exactly what I was going to say, CrossFit Jesus. That's a cool nickname, too.
That's an amazing nickname, and he loves it.
Oh, yeah, I guarantee it.
But you see Seth Rollins matter tonight, and you see Punk matter tonight, and I'm using Rollins because they're similarly built, right? They're about the same height, about the same weight.
Okay.
Rollins doesn't seem beat down like Punk did. And I don't know if that's because of the bodybuilding and the CrossFit or whatever it is, or the athleticism. I don't know. But there's a very big disconnect between the way Punk looked after weeks or days on the road and the way other guys do. So yeah, it breeds concern that the dude was getting beat up. And, you know, conventional wisdom says you sign up for this, but then the whole reason you have medical staff and higher ups is to protect the guy from himself. But I do have to be that guy also in the same breath and say that everybody knows when you sign up for wrestling, it's not ballet. It hurts and it's painful and you deal with it. Wrestlers work with injuries all the time. That's just the nature of the business. Famously, The Undertaker wrestled Hell in a Cell against Mick Foley with a broken foot.
The famous Hell in a Cell?
Yeah.
Really?
So there's you know, Steve Austin finished the match after getting paralyzed.
Yeah, you know, Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson. Owen Hart is gonna sit here and cuss you out.
I know, man. Owen Hart.
Yeah, Owen Hart.
I know you've watched it, but man, when he rolled up Owen Hart with his broken neck, that was the worst roll up ever. You know, because he didn't have any feeling and minimal control of his body. That was scary. Even when I watched it, when I went back and watched it, it wasn't long ago, maybe just a few months ago, I went back and watched it showing somebody. Even though I knew that, you know, Stone Cold is fine today and he's healthier today than he's ever been, and he's got his neck fixed and stuff, like, still watching that, it's scary just to even think about how close he was to being paralyzed forever.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
And I realize that those two moments I just mentioned are very unique and major moments, right?
Right.
It might not represent the daily wear and tear more than, you know, as much as I may want it to, but it's part of the business.
Right. I totally agree. Part I didn't mean
of
it
doesn't feel for him in that right, but it's very clear that at least towards the end of his tenure, definitely the entire, but specifically towards the end of his tenure, dude was really beat up,
mm-hmm.
like more than usual.
Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just wanted to mention that to you before I forgot.
Yeah, that's what. Jump in when you see fit, and that is something to be noted.
Absolutely.
That definitely. I'm sure that's something. Maybe if I was a juror, that was something I would notice.
Right.
That I don't know if that can prove legal impunity on the doctor's part. But it definitely shows that the man was beat up and was trying to deal with it on his own. So, mm-hmm. But to continue with Larry Hex, his testimony, they showed Punk's entrance and at the Rumble, and he pointed out where the hot pack would be on his back. Now, this is where it gets interesting. From October 2013... to January 2014, which is period in time which Punk said that he noticed the bump and dealt with the bump in WWE, at least. Larry Heck, who has been on record of saying he stretched him, his back, his lower back in particular, and his hips and his extremities every show, and gave him hot packs to put on his back every show, and it's proven because there are logs that he logged it in every show. Larry Heck says he'd never noticed an affection, a lump, or an irregularity on Punk's lower back. He also says he never saw Punk bring up a lump or infection to Dr. Amon, nor did he see Punk ask any other medical staff to cut out a lump or infection. That's very, very important news, and going forward. Dr. Amon radioed Larry Heck directly about Punk's concussion in the Royal Rumble, and he said specifically the word that Punk was specifically concussed. So he went to Gorilla, and Larry Heck told Triple H that the doctor said Punk was concussed, and he doesn't remember any other conversations other than he told Punk to stay with the doctor. Kidman told Punk to stay down. And then once Punk got backstage, he witnessed, helped Punk backstage and witnessed Punk cuss people out and leave. He says that he and Dr. Amon tried to get Punk to stay. Punk was angered that they stopped him from what he was supposed to do in the match. And Heck also did confirm that anger, confusion, and nausea are signs of a concussion, to your earlier point. So,
yeah,
that's... the other two aren't as maybe important.
Gotcha.
John Cone was basically just talking about... One thing John Cone did say, he did kind of pull the curtain back a bit. He said that Cone can only communicate through hand signals because clearly you can't hear him talk, and if he does talk audibly, then that would kind of give away secrets.
Right.
So Cone says that with his hand signals, a yes is a closed fist, a no is a shake of the head, and we know about the X. It means injury.
Right, right.
So if you guys watching, if you really want to be behind the scenes, you see a ref do a closed fist, that's a yes. So he's answering a question.
Yep.
His first communication with Punk, I guess, in the match came after the doctor had talked to Punk ringside. Cone asked Punk, "Are you okay?" And he says, Punk says, and I quote, "I've got a fucking concussion." Cone says, "Stay down." Cone was told, "Tell Punk to stay down. We're gonna send Kane out to take Murley." Cone told Punk, and again, this is a direct quote. Punk responds, "If you make me leave this fucking match, I'll fucking quit now." Then Cone repeated what he was told, and Punk pot-faced him. If you're listening, most of us know what pot-face is, but that means, like, put his hand in his face and push him off. And, he also confirms that Punk wrestles without a shirt, and he was never made aware of, and never saw a lump in infection or anything unusual on Punk's lower back. And then Kane basically confirmed, Kane says Punk never told him about a lump or infection. He explained how they planned out the match, and he confirms that he eliminated Punk, quote-unquote, illegally for the Royal Rumble. So, that was the morning. The afternoon is the interesting shit. So, forgive me for spending, like, 15 minutes on that. But the afternoon, they interviewed Mark Carano, who is, as we all know, is the face of talent relations. And they interviewed Colt Cabana. And to add more to that, the last person they interviewed was the physician's assistant who actually cut out or did work on the staph infection after WWE.
What now? Say that again.
So remember, Colt. So there really was eventually a bump on his back.
Gotcha.
The issue is, did it happen in WWE and then nobody do anything about it?
Gotcha.
But after he left WWE in February and March, he went to go see a physician's assistant who's licensed to treat dermatological issues, and that's the guy they interviewed.
See, I'll be honest, I did not read the afternoon notes, right? You know, I got up early.
Sure.
I explained it to you, but just to explain the people that we're hanging out with today on the old radio show / podcast, I got up early, as I always do. To get me in the zone to write about the morning part of the trial, I actually put on Punk's CD, The Best in the World, on the network, or his DVD, I mean. And I watched that for a little bit, and I was taking some notes on the morning part, but I did not get up quite early enough because we started even earlier than usual this morning. We started at 7 a.m. on the dot. We usually start at 7:30. So I had a little bit less time. I actually went to McDonald's and got Bradford some breakfast since I wasn't cooking for him this morning, and I texted Ray a couple of times, so I didn't get to the afternoon part. So that's really cool. One, that they're interviewing the PA that eventually treated Punk for his MRSA. But two, and this is a little bit more embarrassing to admit, I did not know that he had proof that there was an actual MRSA staph infection. I didn't know. You know what I mean?
It's not proof that it was MRSA, but it was proof that he had.
It was proof that it was something, though.
It was proof that there was a bump, that there was a lump on his back that needed to be removed. There was proof of that, yes.
Okay, yeah.
In fact, there's an interview that he made after he left WWE, you know, I guess a couple months afterwards, and he showed the scar.
Really?
Yeah.
So I did not know that.
Yeah, it was never in question if he had it. It was in question of, did you have it in WWE, and did they just not care and not do anything about it? That was the question.
Gotcha. That's cool. I did not know that, so that's really cool to know.
So I'm going to try to run through a lot of this because I hate just kind of monologuing, but I'm, you know, kind of reporting something. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
A lot of the Carano stuff at the beginning of his testimony is just basically saying, who are you? What do you do? Is wrestling, is the Royal Rumble, are you there? Just kind of a baseline of establishing things, right? But involving Punk in particular, he wasn't in Gorilla when the match started, but he moved to Gorilla about midway through the match, and he noticed Punk took a strike from Kofi and landed oddly. He doesn't remember what it was, but he remembers it was a strike. At that point, he says that him, Triple H, and Michael Hayes all went to Billy Kidman and asked Kidman asked the refs if Punk is hurt. He said Kidman said, check on Brooks, is he okay, is he hurt? And John Cone was the only person to send to the back and signal that he got the communication. And Carano saw Punk and John Cone talking, and that he was asked, what did you observe? And Carano said, an aggravated superstar, basically confirming that Punk was upset. Kidman told the refs to get Punk out of the ring a bunch of times. Carano says that he saw the doctor and Punk talk on camera, and that Punk seemed displeased. And they asked him, did Punk continue to wrestle after the talk with the doctor? And Carano said emphatically yes. He says Punk never brought up a lump or an infection. He says Punk did bring up his concussion the next day in Cleveland when he talked to him. Punk was in the arena until about 5 o'clock, because remember, that's the day he left and walked out.
Right, walked out before they went on the air, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
yeah, absolutely. I thought that was the story.
So 5 o'clock Eastern time is 3 hours before the show. So, yeah, that just confirms that, too. Punk also says that... Carano also says that Punk voices displeasure with the medical staff. And here's the interesting part about Carano's testimony. Carano says that Punk was concerned that future storylines were harmed by the changing of the elimination. He also said that he had no knowledge of creative plans because he doesn't work in creative. He works in talent relations. So he didn't know what change Punk was talking about. And specifically, important to this specific point, they noted that Punk looked confused at this statement, I guess assuming that Carano knew. Carano says that Punk was upset with the testing, with the company, and anything involved, Punk getting him removed from the match early. And he was mainly angry about the medical staff changing creative plans. Carano says Punk never brought up his back during the conversation that he had. And he hasn't seen Punk outside of a text message or email since the night after the Rumble. He was not aware of any antibiotic treatment. He was not made aware of any bump or infection. He confirmed he saw him with his shirt off. Confirms he saw a lump or infection. And he said that after... He thinks everybody in Gorilla was concerned that night at Royal Rumble. And he said that Punk was irate after he got eliminated. So let's get to the good part. Colt Cabana. Scott Colton. So pay attention, man, because this is interesting.
Yes, absolutely. Right. I know that sounds goofy, but I literally am like on the edge of my seat. Because like I said, I did not read the afternoon part. And yeah. I've read not a single update about Colt being interviewed yesterday. So, like, I'm legit like, oh, let's get it on.
This is interesting stuff.
Absolutely.
And if you guys will bear with me and just kind of indulge me, I'm going to actually read the majority of this verbatim from, what's my man's name? From Ross Berman.
Ross Berman.
And WrestleZone, yeah.
Absolutely.
Because, so much of it is relevant. So the testimony of Scott Colton, as noted or notated by Ross Berman. Cole confirms that the Art of Wrestling has been around since 2010. He confirms that the Art of Wrestling is taped in advance. He confirms that he has edited parts out of his podcast in the past. That's interesting to note for the record.
Right.
He confirms that he's responsible for promoting the podcast. He uses Facebook, Twitter, and his own website to do that. And he confirms that he uploads the podcast to YouTube and that it's on iTunes through SoundCloud. He confirms that his episode 226 that starred CM Punk was uploaded on November 26th, 2014. The council brings up Colt said the podcast has 3 million listeners. Colt says only to the best of my recollection, but he confirmed that he told a childhood friend that the podcast indeed did have almost 3 million listeners. So we're dealing with reach. About 3 million people. That's the reach that apparently the podcast possibly had. Colt said he got the number through analytics, and Council brings up that that episode got 1.5 million downloads in 4 days. And Cabana responds saying, I don't know.
How many again?
1.5 million. 1.5 million downloads in 4 days.
Wow.
Now, this is downloads. YouTube doesn't deal with downloads. YouTube deals with streams.
Right. So
this is clearly only talking about the iTunes SoundCloud part.
That's incredible.
Council presents a text to the CEO of Earwolf, in which Colt mentions well over 1.5 million downloads, establishing again. Colt confirms this is a new record for the podcast. He confirms that YouTube user AJ Universe streamed the episode on YouTube, and Council enters Exhibit 16, which is a screen capture of AJ Universe's YouTube page, and the count was 1,041,409 views that the upload received. So that's specifically apart from Colt. That's just another guy re-uploading it. So that's another million.
Wow. That is, that's nearly 2.5 million.
That's nearly 2.5 million. That are guaranteed that have watched or listened. Yes,
that's absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Cole confirms that people had to click play on YouTube to listen to the podcast, which basically, I guess they're saying that so that it's not an autoplay thing, so you have to choose to listen to it. He confirms that AJ Universe's page outperformed Colt's page because Colt's page suffered a server crash. He started using SoundCloud in 2014. Colt confirms receiving a cease and desist from the doctor. Ooh. And Colt confirms that the letter asked him to post a retraction of the statements in episode 226. Gets interesting here. Text messages between Cabana and Punk that were confirmed by Scott Colton. Colt Cabana says, I just got a physical letter from a mom. And he also confirms that Punk got one too. Punk's response to that text message, poor guy, I almost feel bad. I was mean.
Mm.
If you can see my face, I got that side eye right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Colt refuses to confirm that he knew Punk was talking about Amon, in the podcast, but it suggests that he might have been talking about the entire medical staff. Colt also says that the next text message that Punk sent after that was, but fuck him. So, poor guy, I almost feel bad. I was mean. But fuck him.
Fuck him.
continues to get interesting. Colt confirms that he continued to distribute episode 226 without retraction or editing for 2.5 years after he got the cease and desist.
Oh, wow. I'm just putting that together. Wow.
He confirms distribution through SoundCloud. He confirms that Art of Wrestling starts on SoundCloud. He confirms that SoundCloud doesn't provide metrics to the public, but he confirms that it's worldwide distribution, including listeners specifically in United Kingdom, Canada, Saudi Arabia. He understood the analytics to be accurate enough. He says he made episode 226 unlisted on YouTube Direct. And he isn't sure if it's accessible, but Council gave Colt his phone, made him enter the URL of episode 226 on YouTube, and it proves that it's not listed, but it's still playable. So if you type it in, you can still listen to it.
Really? And that is where?
On YouTube Direct.
Got you, yeah.
Using the phone, Colt confirms that on YouTube Direct, on the unlisted version of it, the current number of plays are at 789,630.
So that's three quarters of a million people that listened.
And he also confirms that he uploaded it to YouTube Direct after the cease and desist.
Oh.
He co-confirms that Punk showed him his back, but he can't confirm if it was 2013 or 2014. He confirms that the Punk's lump looked like a bubble or half an egg. He confirms that Punk showed it to him. And then something interesting to note, the attorney realized he had been reading, Dr. Amon's attorney realized he'd been reading from the wrong deposition and started again. Colt reprimanded him. Colt questioned the attorney, and the judge reprimanded Colt. So that was a little interesting little blurb there. But
It doesn't say what exactly Colt said, does it?
No,
it doesn't. I wonder if he was just joking. Like, come on, man. You know?
Yeah, you don't know.
Yeah, because, I mean,
again, we know Colt is a happy-go-lucky kind of jokey type guy.
Exactly.
It's court, though. It's very serious.
Gotcha.
But Colt confirms he never questioned Punk's story about the lump. A text from
they're close. They've known each other, a good while.
15 plus years.
How long?
15 plus years.
Yeah, they've been on the road together. They've been packed into cars together. And the reason that I'm using those two things as examples is because, like I said this morning while typing up some stuff, I had the CM Punk Best in the World DVD on. So he specifically talks about how him and Cabana, Chris Hero, and a few other guys would pile into cars, sleep at rest areas in the car, sleeping on top of other people, sleeping on top of the car. They went through all this together, right? So there is a special bondness there, you know? So I don't think Colt had any reason to question Punk's story. Do you?
Not at all. If you tell me right now that you had a lump on your head, I'm not going to be like, you're lying.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got a reason to not believe you. Yeah.
Same goes, you know, like, and especially, you know, it's not like Punk was saying, the sky's yellow or sky's red outside right now.
Sure.
You know,
he wasn't saying something that was beyond the realm of possibility. Absolutely.
Yeah. He's talking about an injury and, you know, he's been injured a lot 2 years leading up to that. So there's no reason not to believe him. Right. Anyway, go ahead. I just wanted to talk about that for a second.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. Colt would have no reason not to believe his best friend. In a text from December 1st, 2014, mind you, this is after the fact. Not 2013, 2014. Okay, he left in January of 2014. So just to give you a timeline, Punk said, "Like a zit that was golf ball sized." So Colt says Colt says once he saw it, it looked like a half an egg, and confirms that both an egg and a golf ball are smaller than a baseball, and that's relevant because Punk said it was baseball size on the podcast. Colt confirms he never saw any paperwork that proven that he had MRSA or a staph infection diagnosis, and he also says he never saw paperwork regarding that he got treatment. He confirms that he never contacted Dr. Amon or WWE or anybody involved. He confirms he didn't know the doctor's name until the cease and desist. He confirms that CM Punk called Dr. Amon, quote unquote, the most worthless piece of shit he'd ever met. Punk confirms that Punk was not unbiased, so basically saying that Punk was biased.
Yeah, I can see that.
He confirms that he never contacted Dr. Patrick Duffy, who is the physician's assistant who did the work on Punk afterwards, who was the next testimony. He confirms that he never met any doctor from Tampa. And Colt's lawyer takes over to ask him some questions. Says Colt can't confirm that any of his listeners listened to the entire podcast or which part they listened to. Colt's lawyer attempts multiple times to get Colt to say that one person pressing play 100 times counts as 100 plays. But Amon's lawyer shuts it down every time until Colt's lawyer abandons the line of questioning. So basically, that was a fail. Colt confirms the server only crashed once. Colt says he didn't think anything Punk said was false. Colt says the cease and desist did not change his mind. Colt says the letter gives no reason to doubt Punk. Colt says the Dodge never contacted him, and Colt says he never saw a baseball-sized slump. So that's everything from Colt Cabana, and it took a 15-minute break before they went back and interviewed, showed the video testimony of Patrick Duffy, the physician's assistant.
And that was, at that point, they took a rest for the rest of the day, right, until day four?
No. They came back and they showed the video testimony of Patrick Duffy.
Oh, is that okay? Okay,
that was the end of the day.
Gotcha.
So run to Patrick Duffy real quick.
Okay.
And this was recorded on August 16th, my daughter's birthday, by the way.
Oh.
August 16th of last year.
That's right. So I remember your daughter's birthday being on the 16th because mine's the 14th. When we talked about that. A while back, one of the first five shows that you and I did together, whenever we first came together for the morning show, we talked about that. Just a little random piece of tidbit.
Right. But it's relevant to mention the day it was recorded because this is, all the rest of the video testimonies were recorded either last month or in April. This was recorded in August of last year. So Duffy has been practicing, his name is Patrick Duffy. He's been practicing for 11 years, licensed in Florida. He's authorized to treat dermatological issues. He's certified by the NCCPA and his license is and has been in good standing. He worked at the Academic Alliance of Dermatology for 8 years, where he saw and treated Punk and other wrestlers. But he did not attend medical school, so he's not a doctor. He never called himself a doctor, only that he's a physician's assistant. So he's not a doctor, but he is uniquely qualified to fix dermatological issues.
Right.
Okay. So, of course, he's treated and diagnosed MRSA. So, he explains the steps to diagnosing MRSA, which can be done by an eye, but usually a culture, which is a specific tool that they use, is what's usually done to confirm the presence of bacteria. So, basically, what MRSA is just a more aggressive form of staph infection that isn't easily treated by antibiotics. That's basically what Mercer is.
Gotcha.
He confirms he saw Punk as a patient on February 13th, 2014, a month after Punk left. Right?
Okay.
Goes over Punk's medical report from the visit, and the original deposition he got was filled with do not recalls, but he does confirm that Punk told him he had the spot for 2 months. Every symptom he has suggests that all he had to do is get drained, and that would be the best treatment. He confirms that Punk had a fatty, sore, tender red lump on his lower back, and confirms that he treated inflammation and swelling. He describes the procedure, saying that he used a scalpel to pierce and drain the lump. He says he would have cultured Punk, which is, again, the tool used to check for MRSA, but Punk refused because he didn't have any insurance. A multimillionaire doesn't have insurance. It's funny.
What? That one statement has got me saying what on, like, two or three different levels.
He left WWE.
Right. But I mean, so, also, we'll talk about it here in a bit.
Yeah. Okay, just write that down because I don't want you to forget it.
Absolutely.
He confirmed that he used a corticosteroid injection to treat the inflammation. He says that there was no central pustule, which is an indicator of staph infection or MRSA. So he's basically alluded to the fact that there was no staph infection.
Gotcha.
He claims that the lump was in golf ball size, or else he would have noted it in the records. But he says the baseball size would have also been noticed too, wasn't the case. So there's an exaggeration from in Duffy's opinion of how big it was. He describes the procedure as unremarkable. There was none of the squirting and the screaming that Punk talked about on the podcast. So, again, more exaggeration, apparently. He prescribed an antibiotic, which was Monodox, and he's done that for everything ranging from skin infections to acne, so it wasn't a major thing. He scheduled a follow-up for 1 week later. Punk didn't go to the follow-up, but he saw him again on March 20th, 2014. Punk still had a bit of a lump, but he didn't diagnose it as anything other than a benign lump. Punk was responding well to the antibiotics. He confirms that he wrote Punk an excuse note that mentioned possible staph or MRSA, but the ICD code identified that it was diagnosed as a cyst. Duffy confirms that Punk asked for the excuse. He wasn't aware of who Punk wrestled for, on March 20th, 2014. He says that staph infection is common in wrestling and that MRSA is definitely a subset of staph. He confirms that he's brought up staph to patients in the past. He explains the procedure of draining, of how he drains stuff, or, you know, stuff like that. He says that the procedure can cause pus discharge, which is why he uses eye protection, but he did the procedure carefully. He says he confirms that a central pustule is not needed to diagnose MRSA or staph. Explains the rationale and procedure for culturing. Confirms that a patient does better antibiotics, likely has had or currently has an infection. He confirms that he never forged an excuse just to meet a patient's wishes. He can't recall discussing ICD codes with patients. He did not culture the bump or lump because Punk was responding well to the antibiotics. And he confirms that staph infection does not respond to Z-Vax. And that was it.
My first question, sorry.
The last people that are left to testify are CM Punk, Colt Cabana's gotta take the stand again, and AJ is gonna take the stand.
Oh, AJ Lee, which if there's anyone on earth that doesn't know who AJ Lee is, that also, she is also a WWE performer, and CM Punk's wife.
Yes.
And now, best-selling author. She wrote a book. Forgot what the name of the book is.
Crazy is My Superpower.
Yes, and it's about her fight against
bipolar.
Being bipolar. It's a book about mental health. I hear it's really good. It's on my list to read. It's on my wish list on Amazon. So, but yeah. AJ, CM Punk's wife. Anyway, so my main question is he said that he did not test, when he lanced it, he did not test it for staph/MRSA on Punk's wishes because Punk doesn't have insurance, correct?
I want to read that specifically, but that's something to the order of yes. Hold on one second.
Well, at any rate, isn't really matter. Just that he didn't test it. So I'm wondering if Punk didn't know for sure. He just knew that he had the bump. He didn't know that if he had MRSA or staph or whatever. He just embellished, never thinking that this would get to this point. I wonder if he embellished. You know what I'm saying?
There's definitely proof he embellished because of the podcast. He said that there was apparently squirting and screaming when he dug it out or drained it. The PA said it never happened. Gotcha. He said that it was baseball sized on the podcast. Other people have said it's golf ball sized. The PA said it wasn't even that big. It was noticeable, but it wasn't that big. Mm-hmm. That's very clearly an exaggeration. And then, again, the dude has medical records, proof of what he did. So he never tested it because of, yes, Punk refused for the culture because of lack of insurance. And he was doing well with antibiotics, but there was never a proof, like a test done or proof that there was staph or MRSA. So, you know, now I don't. That may not be an exaggeration, but very clearly, he didn't know before.
Wow. This thing's like an onion, man.
Got it back layers, dog. You ain't never lied.
Yep. That's just
the Colt Cabana stuff, though. The Colt Cabana testimony is damning.
Yeah.
The fact that they recklessly just didn't care about getting a cease and desist.
Yeah.
You're coming up for another 2.5 years?
2.5 years, right. Joking about it in text messages and uploading it again on a different platform.
And then you're mad because the dude sued you.
Yes.
I mean, come on, man. 2.5 years? I'd sue too.
Yeah, and, I did think that Cabana was the victim for a long time in this, but now, after that, it's kind of like, you know, man, you know, you could have prevented, you could have possibly prevented this, man, if, you know, if you at least should have taken it down, you know what I mean, at the very least, and not continue to share it. But at the same time, you know, I do not know what I would do in Cabana's position.
Well, he was looking out for his friend.
Yeah, that's basically where I was getting at, is, you know, you got to have your boys back.
Sure, I don't blame him for having his boys back, but so the thing that I'm noticing, that, like, I don't fault him for having his boys back. I don't fault him for giving his boy a platform. I don't even fault him for believing his boy, his best friend.
Mm-hmm.
But when you are legally checked, right? Let's use the Young Bucks, for example. The Young Bucks got a cease and desist letter about using Too Sweet, right?
Right.
They don't use it anymore. They don't.
Right.
Sure, they joke about it. Mm-hmm. They made a t-shirt making fun of it. But they will not. They even go as far as to. They went as far as to change the signal. And when other people try to Too Sweet them on camera, they're like, hey, we can't do that. So even though they're able to joke about it and parody it, they still respected the cease and desist.
Exactly.
And that was direct. That Too Sweet was giving them tons of money.
It was fire.
So that's because that's the respect of the cease and desist. So that's just a flagrant disrespect of a cease and desist, which does not look good.
No, not at all.
Then Punk's own words, in his own words, I kind of feel bad for the guy. I was mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he openly admits what he did was not right. He openly admits that he knew that it wasn't right, he went too far. Man, those text messages, I mean, a lot of that stuff could be, you know, the nail in the coffin.
Well, I tell you this, I don't know who's testifying today. I'm almost positive if it's Punk testifying today, because they're only starting at 12, so it's only an afternoon session. I'm almost positive it's only going to be one part. If it's Punk, it'll be just him, and then they'll say go home. But when Punk takes that stand, oh my lord, that is going to be some tremendously interesting and entertaining testimony. And my question is this. Is Punk gonna be? This is gonna sound weird, but I think you understand what I'm trying to say. Is Punk gonna be Phil Brooks on the stand or CM Punk?
It's a good question. Obviously, you know, the smarter thing to do would to be Phil Brooks, and to be cordial and respectful and yes sir and no sir and honest
and truthful,
and
yes.
Truthful, answering honestly. But will CM Punk do that? That's a whole other question. Obviously, I can't see him up there cutting promos and stuff, but to, you know, if he's staring at somebody or gets hostile in his questions or something like that, that's all going to work against him. So let's hope that he doesn't do that. Let's hope that we truthfully get to the bottom in this website. I mean, excuse me, in this whole thing.
You know what the most interesting thing to me about his testimony could possibly be?
What's that?
Most interesting thing about Punk's testimony possibly could be this. I need to know, as a fan and as a person covering the trial, because officially you can say we're covering this, right?
Uh-huh.
I need to know, what made you not settle? Why did you allow this to go to court?
Yeah.
Because WWE and Chris Amon contacted you a couple of times to settle. They contacted you to try to say, we don't want to go to court. We're tired of this. Let's just be done with this. Hopefully we could maybe get a working relationship again in the future. If we go ahead and get this under the bridge, we're done. And
right.
Punk was like, no. What is it in your eyes, mind, or in your holster, if you want to say, that you have, that is making you say, I want this to go to court? I'll pay the hundreds of thousands of dollars. I'll take the time off from my job, which I have to fight in a week.
Yeah.
And do this court case.
8 days, right? 8 days?
Next Saturday night.
Yeah, yes. 8 days.
And the fight is in Chicago, so it's not like he has to go out of town, but still,
yeah.
You could be training. What is it? what is it that you have or that you believe that is making you do this? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I agree. That is such a valid question. I don't know. The only thing that I can really think of is that, you know, he wants to stick it to him. Maybe he wants to prove, whether he did or not, I think he wants to prove, hey, I didn't fucking lie. You know what I mean? And the reason I dropped that F-bomb is because, you know, that's what CM Punk...
Oh, absolutely,
you know,
yes.
That's like my picture of what he's thinking, you know?
Yes.
And, you know, if he didn't lie, then I can kind of see that. But right now, I mean, he's not really... And, you know, I want to believe him. You know me, right? Like... I want to believe that CM Punk did not tell a single lie, did not embellish, did not do this, not do that, but he just went on his best friend's podcast and told him the God's honest truth. But Punk is not convincing me one bit that he didn't lie. So why, if you lied, why the hell would you let it go to trial like this? You know, I don't get that.
Here's the bigger issue. Let's say Punk has extremely exhilarating testimony and makes everybody believe he wasn't lying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we know he's a very emphatic and charismatic speaker.
Absolutely.
Right? And again, I'll speak on proof later after this, but just in this particular situation. Let's say everything he says sounds great, believable, this, that, and the other. Then why does everybody else that was interviewed or questioned said opposite?
Yeah, I don't know.
The only thing that could help Punk and make his case sound valid is if he saw another doctor during the time, and like during October of 2013 to January 2014, and has proof in his medical records that he was seen for that lump. Because other than that, it's hearsay.
Right.
Because the only doctor that you've seen legally that's not a WWE doctor was saw after you left.
Yep. They're not going to have a trial on the weekend, are they?
No. Yeah.
They're going to come back Monday morning?
Government.
Are they coming Monday at noon?
Probably Monday morning. Probably Monday at 9:30.
Okay. Gotcha. Man, why don't we go ahead and take it on home? I know you got family stuff to do. I got family stuff to do. It's Friday. You know what I'm saying? So let's do it. Let's get out of here. I want to thank you so much, man, for breaking down some of this stuff for me. You broke down all of it for me, but there was some legit stuff that I had some questions about. And the way you worded it, I didn't even have to ask any questions. I was like, man, this guy put it... I mean, this guy's on point. So you know what you're doing. So I appreciate it very, very much. Appreciate everybody out there listening to us today. Don't forget to follow Ray on Twitter at It's Ray Cash. You can follow us both at World Class Daily. That's World Class DAILY. You can follow myself at Fox the Podcaster. We're both on Facebook. The show's on Facebook at World Class Daily. You don't need an at for Facebook. I forgot. World Class Radio, though. You can also type in our Twitter handle at World Class Daily into Facebook, and it will pull up our show, and that's also how you tag us in Facebook statuses at World Class Daily. Ray, anything to add before we take it home, bro?
That's it, man. Thanks for listening. I got two other podcasts floating out right now if you're interested, so check it out if you want to. I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely.
But yeah, we definitely intend uncovering this trial as much as we can.
It's very
interesting to us, especially me, and it's relevant. It has a level of relevance right now that is bigger than anything going on, with the exception of covering shows.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll definitely pick this back up on Monday. I might even tweet a little bit about it this weekend.
Sweet, man. Absolutely.
Yeah, because, like I said, there is coverage today, 12 o'clock noon Central Time, of course. They will be reconvening. And Punk has left to take the stand. Coco Banner's got to take the stand again, which they might finish Colt today, actually, more than Punk. And AJ has to take the stand.
Gotcha.
And that's not counting any more video testimony, because part of me feels like they're going to interview Triple H and Vince.
Ooh. Can you imagine?
Ooh.
Let's save that for Monday. But that's going to be big if that happens. Even if they talk about it happening, it's going to be big.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Everybody involved. So I'd argue that Triple H is going to get interviewed. Vince is going to get interviewed. Kidman and Hayes might get interviewed. And Michael Cole might get interviewed because he's ringside calling the match.
Right.
I you know, it's just a sum. Maybe even Kofi gets interviewed. I don't know. We don't know who all they did video testimony for because they recorded it. They didn't. It's recorded, so this and it's submitted as evidence, but it's not made public.
Right.
So they can pop anybody out there. I have no idea.
Absolutely.
So, yeah,
it's just a waiting game. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But like Ray said, we're gonna try to cover the entire thing from start to finish. So please tune in. Don't forget to subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. If you can't find us on your podcast app, look us up through the ChairShot Radio Network. We are on all podcast apps besides Spotify through the ChairShot Radio Network. So don't forget to look us up. Follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, and I think that's it. Everyone have a good and blessed weekend, and stay strong and too sweet.
Hey baby, I hear the blues are calling, toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?